This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and I'm really delighted today to welcome filmmaker, producer, and wonderful person, Alan Schwartz. And I have to tell you why this interview is happening. This really all started during the pandemic. And I read that Alan had created a documentary series about his bar mitzvah in Oshawa in 1973, and how these 10 boys celebrated their bar mitzvah together. And Alan dreamt up this wonderful idea to track them down to share their stories. Tracking the 10 premiered a few years ago, and I was so intrigued about what this was all about. Timing is everything, and I reached out again recently, and Alan said yes. Before we meet him, let me tell you a little bit more about him. Alan graduated with a degree in mass communications from Carleton University in the first year the degree was granted. He spent 2 years working at MTV Channel 47 and then went on to the Life Network. And during that time, he noticed there were no programs really targeted to women in the mature market. And he discussed it with his mom and sister, and they formed a company together, and they produced The Bubby Break. A grandmother in any language means love. The series about grandparenting ran for 5 seasons, and it was hugely successful. After The Bubby Break, the team went on to produce a documentary called Chase K9 Hero about a police handler and his dog. And then there's another thing that Alan did after that. It's called Righteous Humor, a look at the role of humor when it comes to religion. And then a little bit of a departure when mad cow disease stopped the export of Canadian dairy cattle to the U.S., Alan left the production scene to work with his dad, who was a huge exporter of dairy cattle to the States and who was stuck with a large number of cattle. Alan returned to the production industry when his dad passed and started working on new production projects. He is currently a partner in the Cultural Epicurean Network. It's a food network geared to the Black community in the United States, featuring Black chefs and home cooks. Alan is extremely proud of that, and lots of exciting things happening there. As well, he's very proud of his docuseries, Tracking the 10. As well, he has another 6-part docuseries called The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World, about the long-standing and successful run of the Canadian show, The Bubby Break, as just mentioned, starring Alan's late mother, Marion Schwartz. Alan, what an honor to have you here. Welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you, Julia. I really appreciate you having me.
Alan, I'm so excited that you're here because really, as we said in the virtual green room off the top, it's been many years since I've seen you. In fact, my most vivid memory of seeing you was back in the 80s at the Life Channel, which was right near Global Television and Barbara Green. And that was back when the Shirley Show got started. And it's so interesting how there's been so much serendipity, starting with my daughter Lily singing at the Jonah Platt book event. And I didn't even know you were there that evening. Then you telling me about your reaction to Lily singing, and then your connection to my son, Max, and all the people that we have in common. Phyllis Newman, producer from the first season, says hi and sends her love to you. And it's really such a small world, and I can't wait to unpack all of it with you. But first, I was fascinated when I was doing the research to learn that before the Life Channel, when I first met you, you actually worked at CFMT Channel 47 Cable 4, which was the original home of Melissa DeMarco and Nightlife. And Melissa DeMarco, of course, now is the host of Out There. And she was actually our first guest in the studio at Zoomer Radio on our debut show 6 years ago. What are your memories of working at CFMT Channel 47 Cable 4?
You know, Judy, it was one of the most enjoyable experiences of my entire life. When I arrived there, there was 22 different language groups, and the Yannuzzis, Paul and Dan Yannuzzi, were running the show. And they said to me, okay, Alan, here's the situation. We're going to pay you, but we have no budget. So go out there and do what you can do to help raise the profile of the station and to basically make sure that people know what we're up to, what we're doing, and basically make us famous. So it was very interesting. It gave me an opportunity to meet all kinds of great journalists, people I'm still in touch with, like Jim Slotak, who was the entertainment television writer for the Toronto Sun, and just Rita Zekas, and yes, who was with the Toronto Star. Really sensationally good people who've become lifelong friends. And I have so many phenomenal memories. I remember walking through a hall and someone handing me a tape and saying, "You need to go and fix this tape for me." And it was a language I didn't understand. And I tried to tell them that I was not an editor, but they wouldn't hear it. So I went into the editing suite. I did the best I could. I gave it to Master Control. They put it on. I watched it with horror that evening. There was all kinds of blacks in it with the commercial spaces in the middle of discussion, and it was all terrible. And I went in the next day and I snuck up to Master and I looked at their logs, and they had written beside the tape, NFB, not fit for broadcast. So I was leaving there. I was walking through the hall and I actually ran into the guy who gave me the tape, who was Macedonian. And I looked at him and I said, "Oh, I feel so bad." And he said, Feel bad. What do you feel bad about? You did such an excellent job. I can't wait for you to edit my next tape." It was one of the Channel 47
experiences. Oh, my God.
But the interesting thing about Channel 47 were the people who graduated from there. Yes. Barb Williams, who went on to and is still involved with CBC, had a stellar career. And yes, the people you run into who have reached high levels of prominence in the industry. And we all started out the same way, just trying to figure out what we were doing. And it was, the Anousis were great guys. I had a great opportunity and I really enjoyed every second.
That's incredible. What are your memories of our old stomping grounds, the Life Channel?
The Life Channel was really, really, really interesting. I received a call one day from two guys who said, "We're launching this national pay TV network and we want you to come aboard and it's going to be a great time. We'll introduce you to a fellow by the name of Eurus Silkins, who was running the network." Eurus was kind and generous and decent. And then they brought in another fella who was an OBGYN, Dr. John Tyson. And there was a continual conflict between the two guys. And I thought, you know what? There's opportunities out there. I'm going to go grab them. And from there came the chance to go into independent production. But the interesting thing about the Life Network, once again, was I met some phenomenal people such as yourself who have gone on to live really productive and wonderful lives. So for me, you know, you talk about bliss. My whole life has been filled with it.
I love that. I love your attitude. That's one of the best things about you, Alan, is you're such a positive. You're obviously a very talented producer and filmmaker, but you're also such a positive person. I know, and you have said, that you really had an idyllic life growing up in Oshawa. And I wonder if that laid the foundation for much of your very successful life and career, beginning with the award-winning, extremely successful television series, The Bubby Break. And for any listener who may not know, The Bubby Break, one of your most major projects, was the first television series in North America, everyone, that was dedicated to the interests, issues, and concerns of grandparents. The series cut across all religions, demographic, and socioeconomic lines. It was executive produced and hosted by your late mother, Marion Schwartz, and it really made a difference in people's lives. Can you tell us about the show, your brainchild, how it all evolved, and really how not only did it last for 6 years on the air, but how it went on and is still being syndicated all across North America?
It's my absolute pleasure, Judy. When I was at the Life Network, I was taking a look at the programming, and we were always geared and focused towards women, but there was nothing really geared towards mature women. And it just so happened that my mother had an antique store in Bowmanville, Ontario, and she decided she had had enough and she gave it up and she was at home. And she called me one day and said, "You know, I'm kind of bored. You have any ideas? What can we do?" My mother was always looking to get into trouble. What can we do? So it coincided with a guy by the name of Jerry Drage of TV Facts magazine coming into the station, Channel 47. Huh. And then when I was at the Life Channel, keeping in touch and telling me, "You know, Alan, I have a real problem. I don't have any Canadian writers. I'm paying for U.S. writers from a syndication service. Hmm. I need Canadian writers. And I said, good for you, Jerry. I've got one, my mother. And Jerry Dre said, he followed that up by saying, how much experience does she have? And I said, none. And he said, how much do I have to pay her? And I said, that's between you and my mother to negotiate. And he said, okay, let's work something out. So my mother started writing a biweekly column for him, and Jerry had no idea what a bubby was. So the very first column that came out was called The Bubble Break. So in South Florida, there was a place called Lowman's. And my mother and father went down every winter to Hallandale Beach, Florida. And my mom would go into Lowman's and she would get lost. So we would try and find her and we'd call, mom, Bobby. So from that point forward, once the Bubble Break column came out, we didn't have to worry about 12 other ladies running to us when we called out for Bubby. We'd call Bubble and we knew where she was and she would know it was us. So that's she did dope. That for 2 years. So she honed her chops for 2 years writing about a subject that was very important to her grandparenting because she had seen a terrible incident at the Oshawa Shopping Center at a Loblaws where a woman was abusing a small child. And it so bothered her, she needed to get it out. That was her first column. And she wrote for 2 years. And like the antique store, after 2 years, there was a change of publisher. The new guy came in. He said, I'll tell you the topics you're going to write on. I'll tell you how many words you're going to do. And my mother said, and I'll tell you goodbye and good luck. So she left. And one day I was at Life Network and it was near the end of my contract. And we were in the car and we started talking. And she said, my column is getting a good response. I said, yeah, ma. People are really happy with
it. Loving it.
Feedback. So she said, wouldn't it be fun to take that and do a TV show? And I said, why not?
That's unbelievable.
So we drove that afternoon. This is how crazy it was. That afternoon, we drove out to Peterborough, Ontario. And we went to CHEX TV, Chex TV, and we asked for the program director. Didn't know who we were. And his name was Bruce Anderson. And my mother had a very infectious personality. And she said to him, oh, I'm so happy to meet you. We got a TV show for you.
Oh, my goodness.
And Bruce Anderson said, Mrs. Schwartz, it doesn't work that way. You've got to produce a pilot. I need to see a pilot. So my mother said, okay. So he said, so I'd like you to bring it out here and show me your pilot. And then we'll decide what we're going to do. So we got in the car. My mother said, see, I told you you wanted a TV show.
That was, she just, I fell so in love with her. And I do remember the Bubby Break and I remember watching it and enjoying it. But really, I became very familiar in preparing for this show. And I didn't realize that the Bubby Break gathered everyone from high profile experts to famous celebrities and so many athletes to discuss everything from issues of the day to what to make for dinner. When you were rushed, it showcased real life situations that impacted families everywhere. And your late mother, the host, Marion Schwartz, was beloved. She really was. And you can see why. Like, and what you see is what you get. What you saw on camera evidently was what she was in real life. She was nominated for many awards. And this groundbreaking series still resonates today as much as it did when the show first aired. And I love that you created this 6-part documentary series called The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World. And I, as I just said, I fell in love with your mother from the first minute of that documentary. Can you tell us about your beloved mother, Marion Schwartz? And I'm so sorry that she passed away. And I just want to express my heartfelt condolences to you and to your beautiful family who you see in this wonderful film.
Thank you.
But your mom, it seemed, not only touched the lives of her children and grandchildren, but she really touched the lives of everyone she interviewed and everyone she came into contact with, including all the lucky viewers who got to see her show and loved watching her show. Can you tell us more about your incredible mother, Marion?
I'm going to share something with you that nobody else knows. My mother was in Toronto and we did an interview with Ed Mirvish. And Ed Mirvish invited her to come weekly to join him and a couple of other guys for lunch. My mother didn't do it, but it was a really huge badge of honor. The Bubby Break, my mom couldn't have done the show without my dad.
Yes.
My father was the most incredible human being on the planet Earth. They were married for 57 years, and basically whatever she wanted to do, he was completely and totally supportive, and he felt a great sense of pride. That being said, my mother made us make a promise that while we were doing the show, she would never be away from my dad for more than 2 days for any reason.
Wow.
And we lived up to that commitment. She was born in Toronto. The very illustrious Lovespring family, Sammy Lovespring, was my mom's first cousin. She was born on Borden Street. She was a Toronto girl. And my family, my father's side of life, came over from Germany in 1938. And we were allowed into Canada because we were in the cattle business. And when my mother, when I think back on it, when she met my dad, I said to her, what was your first reaction when you met him? She said, I thought he was a square and he was a farmer and I didn't know what was going to happen. She said, but you know what? He was persistent and he was such a good guy that I fell madly in love.
Wow.
And the rest was history. So when she said she wanted years later at 65 to start her new career as executive producer and host of the Bubby Break, my father's response was, sure, honey, go have fun. That was it. He stayed with the cattle. She worked on the show.
On television. Wow.
And, you know, two of the best interviews she ever had were with Cito Gaston.
Yes.
When he was the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and she said to him, Cito, you're going to win the World Series. I have to say, she was very mad at me after the interviews because I wouldn't let her get the ball players to sign a baseball and autograph it for her because I told her it wasn't professional. And then she also met Pat Burns. We did an interview with Pat Burns of the Leafs. And she told him, Pat, you're going to make it to the Stanley Cup. And that was the year that Los Angeles eliminated them in the semifinals. And they came very close. But in terms of the guests, I think the reason that she was able to really relate to people was exactly what you said. She was really, really curious and she wanted to help and she found people that she really liked. One of them was Dr. Mark Greenwald, who was an extremely regular guest on our series.
Yeah.
And another one was Dr. Bruce Labelsky. And there was a little secret about Dr. Labelsky, who was a cardiologist. In the middle of shooting our third season, my mom had a heart attack.
Oh, my goodness. I never knew that. Oh,
nobody
boy, oh boy.
Nobody knew that till this second. But she persevered, and she said to me, I want Labelsky as a guest because I have questions for him. He's always busy. If I can't get him in the office, I'll get him on the show.
That's hilarious. She was something. And you know what I loved also in the documentary, and it actually made me cry, was that it was a family affair.
It was.
I actually cried a couple of times when watching it, truly. Hearing you speak, your sister, Susan, was very involved in the production. Your niece, Alexandra, who might be the Alexandra we were talking about the other day, right? Just beautifully hosting many of those segments, so beautifully with her long, dark hair. And as well, there was what I believe was your brother, who was Orthodox, and he could barely get the words out because he was so emotional. He was crying. Can you tell me about him?
Yeah, that's actually my nephew. He is a phenomenal guy. His story is that he went to UCC. He graduated at the top of his class. He went to Western, went to the Ivy Business School. Then he went to Israel. And while in Israel, he went to a yeshiva. He fell in love and it changed his entire existence on the planet.
Yeah.
And he did my mother right. Shawnee did my mother right. When Susie was married, he became very proactive in the baby department and made sure that my parents saw some beautiful grandchildren.
Yes.
And my great-grandchildren. My parents had a phenomenal relationship with their grandkids. Unfortunately, my brother's wife, Debbie, passed away at an early age.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mom really jumped into the void and she and my sister Susie were with those kids more than I could ever tell you. And you know the old story, Judy, you give love, you get love. And our relationships are all so completely tight. It's unbelievable. And
it's
one of the things that happened during the show, this is really a funny story too. My older nephew, Jonathan, I was talking to him one day and he told me he loved the show called Sex, Lies, and Audio Tape, which was on AM 640 with Shelley Klink. So I told my mother about it. I said, you know, Jonathan loves the show Sex Lies, an audio tape. She said, good. Can you speak to the producer? I'd like to go on it. So the next thing that happened was they interviewed my mom, and Jonathan called me and he said, why did you ruin that show for me? I can't listen to it.
I'll never be able to enjoy it. I was touched by your nephew because of the love that he had for your mother and that he was so emotional he couldn't speak about it. It reminded me of Max and the kind of letter that I got on Mother's Day from Max. But it seemed that she had that relationship with every one of her children, her nieces, her nephews, her grandchildren, that there was just this absolute love. And she found the time, even with this TV show, to just give love to every one of them. It just it blew me away.
She would have thrown the TV show away in a second if my nieces and nephews or my brother, sister, or any of us needed her. In fact, I'm going to tell you something else that nobody knows. There's a reason why when the show ended that we didn't continue with it. My dad was on dialysis. And my mother said, I've really enjoyed doing the show, but I want to be there for dad. And so that's why we never really pursued continue with the series.
You and I, who share a birthday March 9th.
Correct.
I think we have a very similar feeling of love for our families.
We do. It's to be the most important thing in the world. And I just felt and feel very, very blessed to have been born into the family I was born into. I say every morning when I wake up, thank you, God, for letting me be born into the family I was born into and having the family that I have.
Isn't that wonderful? What a wonderful thing to be able to say. We're going to go on a short commercial break. More of Finding Your Bliss and Alan Schwartz and his docuseries, The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World, when we come back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740, and I'm here with filmmaker and producer Alan Schwartz. And Alan, we were talking about your wonderful mother, Marion Schwartz, and your six-part docuseries, The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World. We'll tell our listeners how they can watch the series at the end of the show. But for now, I just want to share a clip with the listeners that really made me cry. Let's roll that clip.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
A Bobby like you.
Oh, you just made my day.
Oh, my goodness. I love that clip so much, Alan. I have to tell you, I had to watch that a couple of times because it's such a beautiful moment in the show. It just makes the whole series. I just love that.
Judy. Should I tell you another secret? You know that little girl?
Yes.
Her name is Alex.
So that is Alex. That's your niece who's all grown up right now and hosts The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World. I love that.
And also, I have to tell you, again, a little secret. The very first guests that we ever put on the show were my two nephews of my niece Alex, Jonathan, Sean, and Alex. And every season that the show was on, they were the first guests that we put
on. Yes. And you also did a wonderful thing. And actually, that's in the next film that we're going to talk about. But it's so beautifully done, this six-part docuseries. And I'm so excited for people to see this. And I also found it interesting that... Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry for interrupting you. I've got to tell you, we're living in an extremely crazy time. And there was two guys at Bell 5, John Buffoni and Paul Gardner. And when I went to them and I said, guys, I'd really like to do a documentary series about my mother, they both looked at each other and they were like, okay, Alan, we'll let you know. We did a screening of Tracking the 10, which was the first docuseries we did with Bell 5. And we had the launch party at our synagogue in Whitby, Ontario, Chabad of Whitby. And nice. John and Paul were gracious enough to join us for the screening.
Wow.
And when it was their time to talk, they stood in front of the crowd and they said, "We just want to let you know, Alan, we've commissioned The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World." So I love those guys.
Isn't that a wonderful story?
I have so much respect for them. Belfi, I'm not a paid show.
You're not an influencer.
But if anybody
who's
has
doing
a great show idea, those guys are the people to talk to. They're wonderful.
Nice.
Human
good
beings.
To know. Good to know. Your mother also directed every segment of the show along with you and your sister Susan of Jams Productions. And it's been said that your mother's success was in how she unified people. And I love that. Can you briefly speak about that?
Yeah. My mother loved people. She always would instill in us when we were young, people have the same hearts as you, people have the same color blood as you, and people want to live nice lives like you. So treat everybody with respect. At the same time, she was a lifetime member of Hadassah Wiesel. She was so proud to be a part of that organization. And she had no time for hate, prejudice. She had no time for ignorance. She had no time for people trying to force their views on other people. She taught us to be respectful, but she was a very proud woman. She's a proud Jewish woman. And she was very active with the Jewish community in Oshawa and wherever she could be. And she instilled those values in us as well. So I think that her whole essence and her whole being was the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that's how she lived her life. I remember when I was in second grade, she came to pick me up at school, and I was walking to the car, and there was a woman talking to her, and the woman was talking terribly about her child who was in my class. And I got in the car, and she said, "Alan, I want you to remember this lesson for life. That lady was wrong. She didn't talk nice about her son. And if a mother doesn't talk nice about her son, nobody will."
Wow.
And it stuck with me for life, too.
Wow.
So that was her from the early days.
She was a good human being. And there were some very auspicious moments that when your mother was given a huge honor in Canadian Parliament. And I want to play this short clip from your 6-part docuseries, The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World. Let's roll that clip.
I'm Alex, and on today's final episode, we'll learn about my grandmother Marion Schwartz's role in the introduction and passing of the Grandparent Year Act. We'll also see how the Bubby Break made it to national television on the Women's Television Network.
The Bubby Break had been on the air for 4 seasons, and it was getting attention from everywhere. Articles were appearing about the show in places like The Wall Street Journal, The Jakarta Post, Broadcast Week magazine, TV Guide, Toronto Sun, Star Weekly, The Globe and Mail, and many more. WSVN of South Florida even named her Woman of the Year.
I hope when you see your grandparents, you tell them how much you love them, right?
Yeah. After all the attention my grandmother was receiving, it was no surprise that Julian Reed, an elected member of the Canadian federal government, introduced Bill C-291 in 1995, which was called the Grandparent Year Act.
And I'd like to read you what Julian stated in Parliament in support of that bill. "I would be remiss if I did not pay tribute to the person who prompted me to bring this bill before the House. Her name is Bubby Schwartz. Bubby, as you might know, Madam Speaker, is the Jewish term of endearment for grandmother. Bubby Schwartz is a television personality in the Toronto area who has a program for senior citizens. It was at her urging that this bill be brought before the House to declare 1995 as the year of the grandparent."
I mean, that just makes you weep. And I can see that you're still emotional and you've probably heard that clip a million times. And this is heady stuff. This is very heady stuff.
I've got to tell you, working on the entire docuseries, going through all the footage over and over again, it left a yearning. I'll be honest.
Of course.
When you're done, it doesn't matter how old you are, you miss your mom. And it was that emotionally, it was somewhat tough at times.
There's a beautiful song called My Wonderful Mother that evidently your mother sang and that her mother, your Bubby, had sang as well. And I love that your mom's dream was to record that song, and she did. thanks to you. And she was really such a pro. She'd never been in a recording studio before. And she did it like she'd been doing it her whole life. And it actually got lots and lots of views on YouTube. Can you set up this song for us of your mother singing My Wonderful Mother?
It'd be my pleasure. She was very close with my Bubby. And she would go downstairs in her house in Oshawa to iron. And she had one of those old hi-fis. And she'd put on the album and My Wonderful Mother, which is actually My Yiddish Mama, would start to play and she'd sing. And sometimes in the middle of the song, she'd have a little cry. And I'd watch it, and I could never understand why she was crying until years later when I heard her sing My Wonderful Mother, and the emotional impact was very, very obvious.
Of course.
And there's a fellow by the name of Richard Rodwell who's inducted in the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame. I've known this guy for 35, 40 years. And I called him up one day and I said, Rich, would it be possible to have my mom come into the studio and do this My Wonderful Mother song? And he said, yeah, I'm going to rearrange it. We're going to do it. Come on in. We went to his studio and she loved the experience. She really genuinely loved it. And I've got to tell you, Judy, she did something else too. There's a fella in Toronto named Mark Kersey. And Mark, who was a stylomander, he did children's music. And one day she was talking and she said, you know, I really want to leave behind in 100 years. I want something for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So she created a series of stories called Higgly Wiggly Wonkers and Snout.
Yes.
We went into Mark's studio. Again, nobody else knows this. And we recorded with original music. Children's book of Higgly Wiggly Wonkers and Snout stories hasn't been released. We haven't done anything with it.
You got to do it. You got to bring it back and make it available.
My mother left. She was constantly, the other thing about her, when we finished the Bubby break, she did not stay idle. She wanted to stay creative. And she wrote hundreds and hundreds of children's stories. And she did them all longhand. So eventually, I have to sit down and I've got to basically transcribe them onto the computer. But she left us behind a very strong treasure trove of stories and original creative work.
Creativity and her love. And I was going to ask you before we play the clip, what do you think it was about your mother that everyone loved and revered so, so much, yourself included?
I'll tell you, she was genuine. She had a friend. She was friends with forever, Mrs. Nichols, who, please God, she's still around. She had friends in Toronto she stayed close with. She adored her brother and her two sisters, Joe Spray and Sylvia Grossman and Silverman. She loved her nieces and nephews. I would suggest that the reason my mother was so well received was she never had an agenda except love. She just was never looking, what is in this for me? What am I going to get out of this? She had a joie de vivre.
God bless her. God bless her.
Yeah.
Let's roll that clip of your mother, Marion, singing My Wonderful Mother. Let's roll that clip.
My wonderful mother, I love her more than ever now. My wonderful mother, I'd love to kiss her wrinkled brow. I'd love to hold her hand once more.
I don't think she would have won American Idol, but you know what? She left behind the song. She yes. was something that was on her bucket list. She checked it off and she had fun. That was a very cool thing about my mother. She was always prepared to do something that was a little outside of her comfort zone. Nothing's crazy, but she had no desire to go skydiving or anything like that. But she did have places where we went that she found really unique. When we went to a nudist resort, it was one of the funniest situations we ever experienced because we sat down with this guy. He was completely naked. My mother looked at him and she said, do me a favor, put on a towel because I don't want to, when I go for the microphone, I don't want to grab the wrong thing.
That's so hilarious. Oh, my God. Do you still, Alan, hear your mother's voice every day and feel her presence with you? Because I know that when a love is that strong, it never really leaves you. How does her presence factor into your everyday life?
You know, when we were young, my mom would say to us, never do anything that would dishonor the family name. So everything that we do, we try to always do with integrity, and we try to make sure that people who we interact with know that we are being genuine, sincere, and honest. And I think that is the most important part of her legacy. The voice is always with her. My sister and I talk about it all the time. My sister, Susie, also, I have to give her credit because she is the one who really made sure we always stayed on track, and she pushed the Bubby Break to all kinds of different levels. So she deserves a lot of credit. But in terms of my mom's voice, yeah, it's a guiding voice, as is my dad's. And I miss them. I miss them. We talked about it today that we miss them, but yeah, we do the best we can do to honor their legacy. And my dad used to say to me, we'd drive in the car together to go to cattle auctions. Sure. And he would say to me, long after I'm gone, my name will be here. And it's really important to leave behind a good name. So make sure you always do that. And
beautiful. That's beautiful, Alan.
That's what I've always tried to do.
That's beautiful. You know, and you're a chip off the old block, I think, of both of your parents. As I mentioned off the top, there's a project you did called Tracking the 10 that made me initially call you and ask you to do this show. And you finally said yes. Can you tell us more about your brainchild and why you decided to create this bar mitzvah documentary to go back almost 49 years, track the 10 boys that you learned your bar mitzvah with in Oshawa? Can you tell us about Tracking the 10?
Yeah, it's one of my greatest pleasures, Judy. We were together, these 10 boys in Oshawa, for many years. We started Hebrew school when we were like 6 years old, and we shared milk and cookies every other day almost till we were bar mitzvah age in my high school. There was maybe out of the entire school population, 3 Jewish kids. There was not a lot of Jewish resources. So in Oshawa, when we were growing up, either you became committed to being Jewish or you kind of assimilated out. And while we were in Hebrew school, there wasn't much chance of that happening because we were all obligated to go to school and get our bar mitzvahs. And it was a big deal to us. I mean, we really look forward to getting to that milestone. And then time passed, and I'm still friends with a guy named Sean Nichols, who I've been friends with since I was 3 years old.
I love that.
And I think, to me, it's really important. It tells you a lot about a person when you look back and see how many friends you still have with through all the years. It says something.
Absolutely.
And I know how Sean turned out. He's got a lovely family, and he's very proudly Jewish, and he's done well. But I wondered about the other guys. I started thinking, you know, there's never really been an opportunity to pursue what happens to guys who grew up in a blue-collar city and who have many challenges. I mean, we all had to fight. It was part of our code of conduct. If somebody called you a terrible name and you were a Jewish kid, you fought. And, you know, now you look back on it and you think, isn't there other ways I could have resolved the issue? But at that time, you know, you did what you had to do. So we all shared this commonality. And I was just curious, when everybody grew up and they made their own decisions, their own life decisions, would they still have the same feeling of pride and still be committed to their Jewish roots?
I love the way you open the series, and at the beginning of every one of the 6 episodes of Tracking the 10, the way you actually play this klezmer music, you really get everyone into the mood. You talk about exactly what you were trying to do, you know, retrace the steps from 1973. So what's happened in the last 49 years? What's their Judaism like? You know, what happened to them? Where are they at? Do they still live in Oshawa, et cetera? And I love the way Rabbi Karfunkel, and I think that's him, appears at the beginning of every episode blowing a shofar right after that klezmer music. And it was so touching that it really made me a bit beklempt when I watched all of those. What made you do that? And can you tell us about Rabbi Karfunkel in your life?
Sure. I want to tell you that the klezmer music was all original music. It was commissioned for the docuseries by a group called El Grupo Musica from Argentina.
Nice.
I found them and I explained the dynamics of the project, and they were completely, totally into it. And they made me make one promise that someday I would mention them on one of them, on some kind of media outlet. So, Judy, I owe you. Now I can send them a note and say I lived up to my commitment. I love Rabbi Karfunkel. He's the rabbi of the Forest Hill Jewish Center, and he is one of the finest people I've ever had the good fortune, he and his wife, Rivki, to interact with.
I agree.
And when we did our first documentary, Righteous Humor, it was Rabbi Karfunkel who provided insights into the Jewish perspective on humor and religion. And he did a phenomenal job. And I just knew I could not have a docuseries that would go anywhere without having Rabbi Karfunkel part of it. So we actually did a very nice interview with him. We've got interviews, but in the context of the docuseries right now, we couldn't quite fit it in, but I needed his presence. And the chauffeur's like the clarion call. It's that it's wake up time. And I just thought having him as part of the docuseries without him doing the full interviews still added a nice little touch. So I am so grateful for you saying that you like that. And I think it just set up, here we come. That there's something about the chauffeur that should reach the soul. And I thought, hopefully that does it with this series.
It really does. And it really has. And I would love to play that clip. Let's roll that clip. Lovely, lovely.
Thank you.
I was explaining to my team that the sound of a shofar means so many things, but it's cathartic, it's cleansing, it gives you hope, it gives you renewed hope and optimism. And he does it so beautifully. And that was just a moment that also got me very emotional every time I heard
Thank
that.
Thank you. Judy, I love you. I've got to tell you how much this means to me, because you produce these docuseries and you put them out there and you hope people are going to like them, and you just, once it's done, it's like your baby is out in the world. So thank you. I am so grateful for your kind words. Thank you.
Of course. We're going to go on a short commercial break and more with Finding Your Bliss and filmmaker and producer Alan Schwartz when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. This segment is brought to you by Toronto's finest dry cleaner, Ashford Cleaners, a family-owned business since 1995. And I am so grateful for their reliable, kind, and helpful service. Thank you, Ashford, for 25 years of making my life and so many families' lives so much easier. With complimentary spot removal and amazing attention to detail, I know that Ashford Cleaners will become your favorite dry cleaners too. They are a legend. Thanks, Ashford. Alan, before the break, we were talking about your other docuseries, Tracking the 10. And what I loved was, as you said, some people were reticent about participating. So of the 10, 3 guys said no, but 7 said yes. And they were a great 7. I'm sure they were all great, but it's wonderful that those 7 did. And I love the way you said miracles began to happen. And this, as a life coach, is so important for me to impart to people, that even when your project looks like it's not happening, keep going. As Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup of the Soul, says, when you're 9/10 of the way to the finish line and you want to give up, just keep going for that extra 10th of a mile and just do it. And I think that's what happened to you. Miracles started to happen. And these interviews were so beautiful with Ted and with Larry. And And I want to just bring up Larry for a minute because he shared that he had prostate cancer when you interviewed him. And you reminded me of your mother because you were so outward focused that in a later clip in that film, you did a little bit of a PSA, a public service announcement about prostate cancer to all the men your age that might be listening and watching this documentary to be aware of the signs and to know what to do. But I also love, just in terms of our show, that he was a musician. And during the pandemic, he finally, after never writing his own music, went out on a limb and wrote some music for the first time. And I just want to play a bit of that clip called Larry's Song, how he finally went out. And I thought it was fantastic. Here is Larry's Song. Let's roll that clip.
Do you create original music?
It's funny, you know, because I thought to myself for many years, Larry, you cannot write any music. And I said that to myself. And when you say things like that, you believe it, right? So when the pandemic hit, I got bored. And I finally said, what the heck? I'm going to try to write some music. And I did. I've written 13 songs in the pandemic so far.
I've been searching and seeking, wasting my life to get there. If I stop.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Was he thrilled that you included?
He was so genuinely happy. And, you know, I think for me, the result of the Tracking the 10 series was I saw that these guys all turned out okay. All 10 guys. I mean, the reasons for not participating are very clear to them, but the reality of life is the 10 guys are all mensches. They all turned out okay, and they are proudly Jewish.
Incredible.
There's something in the water in Oshawa, growing up in Oshawa, that somehow the pride in being Jewish and supporting Israel and in being just very, very honored to be a part of this very small group of people who exist in the world and never turning their back on their faith or on Israel was really the most redeeming thing for me of the series. And again, the fact that we could put it on Bell 5, that there was no exploitation, there was no stereotyping, these were genuine people who were talking from their hearts. And it just felt so good that there was a platform out there that allowed us to be able to do that without having any kind of nonsense or not allowing the series to develop the way it developed.
You were also such a gracious host with these different interview subjects. Like, I love your interview with David, who became an emergency room doctor, and how he left Osh and went to Toronto. And I also love that your best friend Sean's son had his bar mitzvah in Israel. Like, this was really impactful, and just the messages of how you work for a year to learn your portion, your bar mitzvah portion, and it's all over in seconds. I loved when Sean said that, and I loved your lovely interview with David and with all of them, but the way you were so gracious with all of them and made them feel good about it just made the whole thing work even more. There's a very touching moment, Alan, when you went to visit your family home of 65 years in Oshawa, and it was the time where you had to give up the house. And this was a place where all your friends had come and congregated, and it was filled with so much love and so many great memories. What was that like for you when you had to say goodbye to your house for the last time?
You know, it was like anybody who's involved in a long-term relationship and you move on, it's bittersweet. The reality was we had so many phenomenal, great memories there. And I will always be extremely grateful for growing up in that house. It was a lovely street, Churchill Avenue. I always had that British connection. Now my partner in life is based in London, England. So she felt it was karmic that I grew up on Churchill and we're together now. But the reality was I had a long discussion with my sister about it. We had the house and it was just time. The neighborhood was starting to change. It's an older neighborhood and we just thought, you know what, we will always respect the past, but just like my mom was doing, we have to keep moving forward.
Absolutely.
So it was bittersweet.
But you have those memories not only in your head and your heart, but you have them on film, which is so lovely that you could watch that film and other people can enjoy that film and remember their memories, because we're all sentimental about those very special places. But the most special places in your heart, like, that never leaves you. That's your mother. That's your family.
I actually think one of the reasons Belfod commissioned the Tracking the Tent series was the guy said to me, we see a commonality with all kinds of different faith groups, that you grow up with people, you experience things with people, and then we lose track of them. So the fact that you can go and find them again is kind of, in a weird way, really reassuring.
It's fabulous. You've said that finding the guys in your Bar Mitzvah Hebrew class was one of the most gratifying experiences of your life. Can you tell us more about why it was so important? It was one of the epiphanies in your career thus far.
I would suggest it was because I didn't know how these guys were going to react to A, coming on the docuseries, and B, I had a little trepidation because I worried what would happen if one or two of the guys weren't doing well. I didn't want to see anybody in a negative position.
Yes.
What if they're struggling? And I didn't want to be exploitative. But the reality was, Judy, that when I did interact with these guys, like Martin, for instance, we had such a great laugh because there was a bar in the Janasha Hotel in downtown Oshawa, which was owned by Harry Feiner, which was Michael Feiner, one of our Bar Mitzvah guys' fathers. It was called Harry's Hideaway. It was the crustiest bar ever. And when we had our Bar Mitzvah parties, a lot of times we had them at the Janosh in a place called the Piccadilly Room. And Martin said to me, you know, we were 13 years old. We made a huge mistake. I said, what was the mistake, Martin? He said, well, why didn't we just slip away from the Piccadilly Room into Harry's Hideaway?
Have some fun. Okay, this is not a blissful question, but I have to ask it, of course. Anti-Semitism is on the rise in a very frightening way. You talked about this in many of the interviews, but this was filmed when things were not as inflamed as they are right now. What are your thoughts on all of this, and how do we combat it? And I think of your mother and what she would have said about this and how she would have used her platform to save the world.
I think we do it by not shrinking away from our responsibilities to be proud Jewish people, to allow people to know who we are, what we are, and what we stand for, that decency, honesty, truth is what we live for, that family is our most important thing, that we're not interested in engaging in nonsense and rhetoric and lies. My family came from 1938 Germany. We lost family members in the Holocaust. I think we have an obligation to the memories of 6 million people to say we will not accept lies being made about us and being told about us. We don't care what level. Misinformation is misinformation. The inculcation of young people has been absolutely atrocious at every level. And it's up to us. We're a small group. But the only way that we're going to ever defeat this stuff is by saying, no, we're not going to accept your lies. We're not going to accept your misrepresentations. We're going to continue to do what we do. And we're going to work hard. And if you close a door on us because we're Jewish, I guarantee you either one or two things will happen. We'll go through a window or we'll kick the door down. We're not putting up with hatred. We're just going to be who we are and we're going to live our lives and we're going to enjoy our families. And if people don't like the fact that we exist and we're part of society and we're contributing great things to society, that's their problem. The reality of life is, we're here, we're Canadians, we love this country, we're proud to contribute to this country, and if you have problems with that, it's your problems, it's not ours.
You're doing so many wonderful things. We talked about it very briefly. It's called the Cultural Epicurean Network. It sounds wonderful. Briefly, can you tell us about that and when this might be happening?
Yeah, so I met Chef Dorian Hunter, who is the winner of MasterChef Season 10 in the United States. And Dorian is an incredibly lovely, lovely woman. And then I had the great opportunity to meet two women, Lori and Lisa Madewell, sisters. Lisa's a vegan chef. Lori has been in the production world. She's an educator. And we were talking about this tremendous lack of representation for Black African-American chefs and home cooks, talented people on traditional networks geared to the food industry, to people who like to bake and cook, there's no representation really on a consistent basis. So again, if a door closes, you have to create one. And we've been working to create this platform. People can check it out at culturalepicureannetwork.com. That's our first step. And as a Jewish guy, again, I am working with these amazing, amazing African-American women. We have a very, very strong bond. I think I've been adopted. I love these ladies. And we think that the market space is huge. And one of the shows we've commissioned is Kosher Soul Food. It's with a black chef out of LA who's Jewish. And we're putting together right now our inventory. We have a number of really good chefs already signed up. And we're hoping that this thing will become global. It's been a long process so far. Sometimes, like you mentioned earlier, and you've given me more fuel for my fire. We're just going forward. And of course, there's obstacles, but we're working hard on this. And again, I feel proud, just like the NAACP did with the Jewish community during the civil rights movement. I know it's a stretch to say I'm doing the same thing with these ladies, but we are trying to create something that has never existed before and put it in the United States so African-American children, Black children can be inspired and aspire. So I'm proud to be part of that.
So great. How can people watch your beautiful documentaries and films like The Grandmother Who Tried to Save the World, Tracking the 10, and the original show, The Bubby Break?
So the original Bubby Break, we've still got away from broadcast. We haven't released the original Bubby Break. There's a few reasons for it, but eventually I promise it'll all be out there. Bell Five has a long-term commitment with us for Tracking the 10 and for The Grandmother Tried to Save the World. So they're not going away anytime soon. We do have a couple of the trailers for each show, one for Tracking the 10, one for The Grandmother Tried to Save the World on YouTube to give a snippet of what it's about.
Great.
But the best thing to do is find Bell Five and you can check it out.
They
do have a lot of other good shows. Again, I'm not their publicist and I'm not a shill for them, but I am grateful. I'm grateful that they gave us the opportunity.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to see it. Invite us to the launch party or invite us to tell us when it's actually happening so that we can promote it, and we will on the air.
Thank you.
Maybe do it in the studio.
It'll be my pleasure.
That'd be great.
It'll be my pleasure.
That'd be awesome. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show, and of course, we're going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Alan Schwartz?
My family.
Yeah.
It's my family, my great nieces and nephews who bring me such incredible, incredible joy. My nieces and nephews, my sister, my brother, my girlfriend, partner, fiance, whatever we want to call her, her family. She's got an amazing daughter named Jade and a son, Alex, and his wife, Lauren, and their two kids, Daniel and Ilana. These people every day influence my life in such a good way. It's total and complete bliss. I told you at the start of the interview, Judy, and I don't want to put a curse, a jinx, or a horror, or anything on it, but I feel like I am the luckiest guy on the entire planet Earth. I love my life. I love every day. I know time goes very quickly, and I just try to make the most of it. So my bliss is being around the people I love as often and as regularly as I can.
How wonderful is that? I mean, that is the best, and I'm so impressed that that's your answer.
Thanks,
what a beautiful, beautiful answer. What is the best way, Alan, for people to contact you and connect with you on social media, your website, all that?
So I'm on LinkedIn. I have a gazillion people I'm connected to on LinkedIn. So it's Alan Schwartz at Jams Productions, STHWARZ.
Awesome.
And otherwise, I'm ashamed to say this as a producer, but I have not really conquered social media. My Facebook is limited to a few friends.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. Maybe that's why I have bliss. I just am not a social media maven.
Yeah, maybe there's some truth to that. Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Alan Schwartz who is living their bliss. If there's any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on our show, just write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I want to thank Alan Schwartz and our Finding Your Bliss team and everyone here at Zoomer Radio. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center, and our segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.